All right, thanks for joining us on today's podcast. Today in the studio, I've got Cody Wiseman, owner, founder of Wiseman Capital. Yep. And he's got an awesome project that he's doing that we're going to talk about. And so what's up, man? How you doing?
Excellent. Hey, thanks for having me. It's nice to finally meet in person. I feel like I'm sitting in a room with a celebrity. You know?
I feel like I'm sitting in a room with a celebrity.
Yeah, I don't know about that, man.
You got the biggest multifamily meetup in the Midwest or whatever.
Yeah, for multifamily investors specifically.
How do you know it's the largest?
Trying
to jab you right out of the gate.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Here we go. There's a few ways, right? Because I'm very focused on multifamily investors specifically and talking to other meetup founders. And when I first started this, I had a ton of people all around the Midwest reaching out like, how are you getting all these people to show up?
Got it.
And just through some research,
got it.
I'm sure there's some that, you know, bring in a few hundred people that are multifamily focused, but you know, ours is a quarterly event, very focused, multifamily, mainly the Madison market, but we're getting people from Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, northern state of Wisconsin.
I think you had someone show up from South Dakota one time because I went to, I was out in, where was I? I was somewhere out west and these guys that had followed me forever, they saw me on the street or whatever, and they started talking about your meetup event. So I don't know if they've heard of your event or what, or if they've been to it, but they said they were from South Dakota. And I was like, dang, it's like crazy.
We've had guys fly in from New Jersey and New York, and a couple of those were speakers. So we had like Madison Specs, which is cost segregation, and one of my senior advisors came in and spoke on his story and stuff like that. So it's a unique event, something that. The feedback is nobody's ever seen anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. It's very networking focused, which also has a little spin of some education, right? It's not going to be 2 hours of sitting down and learning, but there's an educational component. But there's people that literally just woke up that morning like, I want to learn about multifamily or being a passive investor or buy my first duplex. And then we've got guys that are in the room that are doing this for 30 years and have thousands of units.
Sure.
So it's a really unique environment.
Yeah.
So
how many people get into this, show up to the event?
So we actually just had one last week. We had over 200.
That's awesome,
we had 348 people signed up.
That's sweet.
We kind of lose count when people are coming in. We hosted at the Madison Club, which we've kind of outgrown.
A ton of space there for that many.
No, not when you're downstairs.
You have to open up the Edgewater. The big room with the Edgewater.
We're talking. I actually just left her a voicemail this morning.
That's where I do my mastermind events in the Red Crown room upstairs.
Yep, upstairs,
which is smaller,
right?
Intimate.
Yeah, and I'm bummed I haven't made it to one of those yet. I know when you first started, I think it was in Florida that week that you had it.
Yeah.
But you had some guys come in. Shay actually came to a little meetup that we had the night
that's
before
right.
yours.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't my meetup, but I was speaking at that one. It was like the Madison.
Shay's crushing it, man. He was on the podcast.
I listened to it. Yeah,
he's great.
He's awesome. And so some of those guys that were coming to that first mastermind of yours came, so I got to
Well, here's the plug. March 18, 19, 20. We still got some tickets available if you want to come, man.
That's awesome. I think, you know what's so funny? I think I'm in Florida again that time.
the following day, March 18, 19, 20th. We still have some tickets available, but the following day I leave for Cabo. We're going to Cabo.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
Like, do the event, head to Cabo for a week and hang out for spring break.
Good recovery, though.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, crush it mentally decompress.
The mastermind, I'm like, I'm
it's all in.
Info, and it's like, and it's just me. I don't bring other people in. Yeah. It's just me, and it's like everything that I've learned. It's like we start on a Tuesday night at 5 p.m. and I go for an hour that night. Then it's networking and drinks after that, which is a great time. And then it's all day the second day, which is the 19th, March 19th for this. And again, I'm going all day talking about how I got the deal, how I find deals, how I dig them up, how I structure them, how we manage them, how we buy them, how we do deals with investors, how we don't do deals with investors. I share operating agreements. I mean, it's like everything that I've done. And so it's a lot. And then the second day or the third day, we're done by noon and people head home. But like by the end of these, I'm usually like, I can't hardly talk for a day and a half after just because like it's so much. And by the second afternoon, I'm on like cough drops and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how you do that. I will make a plug for you again on this. I know I have not been there, but also Peter, who I think Peter came to, I can't remember which one he came to, but I met up with him. I met him like 2 weeks before he came out for that at an event in Denver, Colorado. Yep. He's like, hey, I'm coming to Spalding's event. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm out of town for this one, but I'll be there. We're back in town like your last day or whatever. Yeah. And so the next day we grabbed lunch and it's like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Like you open up the curtain, right?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
People really get the value there. Yep. And speaking on the energy piece, I mean, I just do a 3-hour event and I'm not even speaking other than thanking the sponsors and maybe a little intro or speaking at a couple of these events, but I'm exhausted.
It's a lot of energy.
When you put that energy, but I think that's why they're growing and so successful. And like with your mastermind, there's a reason that it's successful and people are finding that value is because it's what you put into it.
100%.
And you 100%. Can, when you go to events that there's very little effort, it's very obvious. 100%. And it just, you start attracting the wrong crowd and I've seen the people that come to your mastermind and I've seen the people that come to the Madison multifamily meetup. And it's like each time it just gets better and
That's great.
And people that have that abundance mindset that want to help each other grow. Yeah. Right.
Exciting to be in room. I see. And the thing is too, is like it energizes me just to be around those types of people. Mm-hmm. So, and then to get paid to do it is a kind of a cool thing too. But like part of the reason I started charging and then we got to move on because we want to get into your story. But part of the reason I charge is because I used to just anyone who wanted like free mentorship, like, yeah, sure. Yeah. I want to help you out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They would never do anything with it. So by the time you start charging them and you know whatnot, then like, okay, now I'm committed. Now I'm gonna go do what you're telling me to do. So, anyways, you have a really awesome project going on. I don't think it's the first one that you've done. I think you had a couple duplexes and whatnot prior.
Yep.
But why don't you tell everyone what you're up to?
Yeah. Here, let me just take a real quick step back, kind of give a little 30-second pitch on my background and stuff
little
like that.
So, for people.
My background growing up, it was in the construction trades. My dad was a home builder, so I was always on job sites. Never wanted to be a construction guy.
So you kind of already came into real estate, already understanding like the maintenance end of stuff?
The maintenance. I mean, my summer jobs and weekend jobs in the fall and spring were building houses with my dad.
Yeah, so we're opposites. I don't know shit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very handy.
Couldn't do anything. Couldn't change a light bulb.
Yeah, very, very handy. And I enjoy that stuff. But anyways, I knew I didn't want to quite get into that. So long story short, ended up going into a marketing degree, going into sales, ended up working with a lot of different early stage startup companies because I wanted to be, you know, closer to the founder CEO because I want to help influence the direction of the companies. I'm very entrepreneurial, but didn't know what I wanted to start. Always loved real estate. Didn't want to be a broker. Didn't want to always like be chasing the next deal. I love the brokers in my network and I'm really good friends with a lot of them because they earn their commissions. Trust me.
Yeah, for sure.
But I just knew I wanted to build something a little bit more. And so I was working at a startup company and I was like, I was going to build another house because I built a couple personal homes in the past and sold them. And I was living in an apartment downtown Madison. And I was like, okay, I need real estate back in my portfolio. Well, it was COVID. Costs were through the roof. I'm like, why don't I just buy a rental property? The only real estate agent I knew at the time and anybody that owned or did anything with it was Tony Tucci. So he was my single family guy. I reached out to him. I was looking at doing a BRRRR and I could not find a single family that worked. So I said, Tony, we got to go bigger. Fast forward, he ended up finding a 3-unit down on East Dayton, 938 East Dayton was the first triplex that I bought. I was scared shitless. Putting 60 grand into that, bought it for 255, fixed it up for 40 grand, reappraised, cashed out, bought another one, brought in my dad on the next one, which was a 4-unit. And then 6 months later, bought a 12-unit in Sun Prairie with another partner who I just met a couple months before that. And he straight up asked me, he's like, can I invest on this one with you?
Yeah.
And at that moment, it kind of like clicked. I was like, okay, here's a guy that just bought a duplex, wants to keep investing, but doesn't have the time to do it. You know, he's got a full-time W-2 and going to be starting a family and stuff like that. So that's kind of where I started. Where I am today, full-time at Wiseman Capital, is we are doing a hotel conversion. So if you're familiar with an old Super 8 over on the east side of Madison, off Hayes Road, kind of up past Perkins and
pretty
stuff
much
like
your
that.
Traditional, and anyone that's not in the Madison area, pretty much your traditional.
Your traditional Super 8. Three-story Super 8, the first and second floor kind of have that exterior entry, kind of motel look. And then the third floor, you enter the units in an interior hallway. So looked at that one almost 2 years, a little over 2 years ago now. And it was quite the journey to get where we are today. We're about 2 months, hopefully, from finishing this project up. We've got about 140 people on a wait list that are wanting to move in there. And it's 129 units.
You found a real kind of a niche with, I mean, because you're going to be able to price those really aggressively.
Yeah.
Right? If I remember correctly, I think I saw the deck. Someone sent the deck to me.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I think, and I can share maybe with you. Maybe you sent it to me or whatever. Yeah. But if I remember correctly, like, because are they all 100% studios?
Yep. And so we did a lot of research before we decided, okay, are we going to, you know, convert some of these to one bedrooms or studios? And with that specific market and location in that neighborhood, there's a lot of two bedrooms. and a handful of ones in very little studio. So the people that want to live alone at kind of that affordable rate, you're looking at $1,500, $1,600 right. for very little one bedroom yeah. inventory around there.
Also, and that's kind of the get in price.
Yeah, that's like, a, that's like, a get in. Like
even if it's not, I mean, could someone go out and really hustle and try to find something for cheaper? Yeah, but I mean, really it's a get in price for really nothing special.
No.
For a one bed.
Yep.
So now they're going to have a new product, you know, basically brand new product, mm-hmm. everything, all brand new finishes and whatnot, and it's going to be studio. How many square feet are they?
They average 300. So we've got some a little smaller, some a little larger. So again, depending on first and second floor, in the third floor, they're kind of different floor plates when you think of the interior hallway bumping out on the third floor. So the third floor units are larger.
Got it.
And then first and second floor are the little bit of the smaller ones.
And then what's your average rent?
$1,075 is what we're advertising and getting people to sign up for. We have not signed any leases yet because we'll probably get into this with timeline and stuff like that with contractors and how projects like the headaches that you run into. But we'll be signing leases hopefully in the next month or so once we have a little bit of a more confident certificate of occupancy.
How do you go from, owning, call it what, 20 units, 15 units?
19.
19, owning 19 units, then making the jump to say, all right, here's this Super 8 and we're going to convert it. Because that's like I think for a lot of people, like even like 19 units, there's a lot of people like, oh, I'd love to have 19 units. Yeah. But like even there's a lot of people that are potentially listening, like, man, 19 units from, that to going and finding this hotel, to having to probably go through and get permits and get it approved. And then it turned into 129 unit and being a conversion, all the construction. It just seems like very complicated compared to having 19 units that you kind of picked up. How did you?
Oh, man, Justin, where do I start? So really how I number one, just backing up. So November of 2022 was when I made the plan to quit my W-2. And at that point, I knew I was going to be doing larger projects, but I wanted to be full time and go all in, burn the boats.
You committed.
I committed. I saved.
You had
up
courage and you committed, which is freaking like everybody that comes on the show. They got courage and they committed.
Yep, it's honestly that simple, and that's what I even tell people. Like it's just I made the decision, and I'm going after it, and I'm getting it right.
So when you let go of your job, did you already have income that had replaced that, or were you kind of taking a pay cut, basically?
Oh, I took a huge pay cut. Yeah. I talked to my now fiance. Yeah, she was girlfriend at the time, but I mean, I could see the future there. But I talked about it, and she's like, you've got to do that. Like, you... She knew I was all in before I was even...
She was pushing her to make the jump.
And I've got some stats behind that, too, on how my net worth has just, like, tripled since I started dating her. Like, it's I like those analytics and stuff like that, but... So anyways, long story short, so I'm December 22, I'm full-time at this and I'm really like hitting the pavement, right? And talking to brokers and stuff like that. And it was about 2 months later, I think it was maybe towards the end of February of 23, Ryan Schmitz with the Hub Realty here had reached out and he's like, hey, you want to convert a hotel into apartments? I'm like, what? Yeah, tell me more. And so we had this off-market opportunity and I went into their office and sat down. And he had another guy, Greg Schmansky, if you're familiar with him, had looked at it as well in the past.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit and he's like, man, this could be a good project. And so I sat down with Greg and Ryan and I'm like, man, there might be something here. I was like, what? Why would you not want to do this? And knowing what I know now, how much work goes into it, I understand why
Greg passed.
And so I think other people have maybe looked at it as well, but it's quite a heavy lift, but there's a lot of value to be had there. And I was willing and able, and I stress test the crap out of it. Right. Yeah. I mean, I was like, okay, what it's like every day, like just like when you're going through your deals, it's like, why should I not do this deal? You're always running that analysis of like, okay, the good, the bad, do I keep moving forward? Like it was every single day and I'm putting, $150,000 in on this deal and, now I've got to go through the city permits and go through the neighborhood meetings. And so it was quite the journey.
Yeah.
Happy to give any details you want on it.
Do we have a pen and a piece of paper? I want to do something.
Oh, boy.
I want to see how off or how on I am with this.
All right.
What's your valuation on it once it's stabilized?
Once it's stabilized, $17 million.
Damn. I was off.
How far off?
Put $13,250.
Oh, man. That's what it's... Yeah.
Undercut.
So, So, okay, how many units is it again?
129.
129, so price per unit. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
We're, And it's going to be newer. I mean, you know, efficiencies with your utility, efficiency with your utilities probably, right? Low flow.
Oh, my God. Well, hold on. You're saying, are LED. We going to pay for utilities and that's going to be included in rent?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, well, either way, is it, you're going to have some common area, right?
Yeah. But so the reason I call that out, Justin, is that was one of the challenges we run into in this
process. Getting approval.
Is getting this approval.
Madison wanted you to cover it for him.
Well, no. So Madison was, this is going to sound crazy. Madison was actually really good to work with. They really wanted this project converted.
Yeah.
The police department really wanted, like, it was kind of a troubled location, right? Right. Because when it's tucked back in this residential neighborhood, it's got apartments and an office. You can't do a background check on who's staying at the Super 8 motel. Anyways, that's what I always say. I'm like, okay, this is right away. We're going to make this project better.
Yeah.
Went off on a tangent and forgot where I was going with that, Justin.
Probably you were going to bring up someone
pushing the sub-metering.
With someone else. Yeah. Was anyone else pushing back on this project?
Yeah.
You were talking about utilities.
Yeah, so with the utilities real quick, so that was the plan. We could quickly convert this. We would just have it a utilities included in rent, right? So it's a flat fee, very common, or do a RUB system.
Yeah, we have one property like that.
Yep. And this building's, you know, was built in 88, so we're repurposing it. Like, we would think that we'd be able to do that. Well, no. The state of Wisconsin, the Public Service Commission, mandates MG&E in this scenario to
1 meter per
per.
Yeah.
So here we are trying to go for a waiver. So I'm doing a few things at one time. There was a deed restriction on the property as well that we found as we're doing our due diligence after it's under contract that we could only build 36 units there. So we had to work with one of the neighbors and kind of negotiate that and find a win-win for all of us so we could get our density that we needed.
I think I know the neighbor. I'm friends with him. I got no, if it's the same person that we're talking about.
I was going to say,
I'm friends with him. I grab a meal with him 2 or 3 times a year and he's great. There's a lot of people that don't like him. There's a lot of people that love him. I've got nothing against him. And I love the guy.
That is 100% my stance. You ask anybody in my circle and I say the same thing too. Yeah. I said, I respect the guy. He knows what he's doing. Like, and at the end of the day, I totally get it. Right. Yeah. Like, I would want some protection too, because the whole, a lot of the neighbors, so we had about 40 people show up to the neighborhood meeting when I went to present it to the neighborhood. And everybody thought that we were going to be renting it to the city, or it was going to be one of the homeless shelters, I guess. Yeah, let's just call it like it is, right, guys? And so very quickly, we were met with support because I said, here's what we're looking to do. We're branding it as affordable luxury, right? Uh-huh. There's no government subsidies. There's nothing that we're doing.
No,
there's
no
credit.
Nothing,
no tax credits.
No rent cap.
No income restrictions.
That was market rate.
Fully market rate, but it's going to fall under NOAA, right? Naturally occurring affordable housing, because where the rents are compared to the median income. But let's take a step back, because I didn't want any restrictions for one thing, because we've got 129 studios. There's already a limited amount of people everywhere that are going to live in a studio, right?
Yeah.
So let's not cap it. If you're a nurse at UW Medical Center, which just opened up here,
just ginormous,
5 minutes from here. So when we're looking at having travel nurses and residents and stuff like that live here and offering some furnished models, I didn't want to say, hey, sorry, you're making over $65,000. You can't live here.
For sure.
That just
would have limited your business plan.
Yeah, so back to the sub-metering.
You're never hitting a $17 million valuation
exactly, because once, those problems. Yeah, because if we had that, that's about where it would be at, about 13, 14 million if we had to keep the utilities in our expenses and do a bill back and stuff like that. So thankfully, we were able to get the meters in.
Yeah.
Those are going in. We just had somebody, we had to do an insurance claim on the switchgear the other week because somebody dump some liquid down a pipe that was not connected yet, and it got on the switchgear and voided the warranty. So that was a $60,000+ hiccup and a little delay in the project. But tons of learning lessons. But again, that's backing up why before I did a project like this, I needed to fully commit, because this is my life, right? I'm out there every single day working, like keeping an eye on all these change orders and stuff.
Did you have a mentor then? Because again, it seems like it's just, again, so much more complicated than just buying a 12 unit that you kind of go through and rehab the units as you go, and you're renting it and you're kind of cash flowing as you go. So did you have someone that you looked up to that you ran this stuff by that helped you through the processes, or was it just, you know, a matter of diving in and taking some bruises and then, you know, figuring it out.
All of the above. So I do have Matt Piccini, who's one of my senior advisors. And so we had looked at this. He actually invested on the deal with me as well. But he, you know, like he's never done a hotel conversion.
Yeah.
He doesn't know the market, you know, I mean, but we'd still be doing our underwriting together. Yeah. And I learned a lot of tips and tricks from him and stuff like that. And, but yeah, it was me just fully believing in what this could be and doing the research and going through every single property assessments and, okay, what's the unit count on that? Like trying to figure out what square footage are we here? How do we compare and stuff like that? Yeah. And,
When you got the property tied up, you mentioned before you had $150,000 in or something. Was that earnest money? That
was earnest money. Yeah.
Okay. So that was earnest money.
Yep. And so we
then wrote, you probably also had probably a lot of hard costs with, you know, getting architects, the plans. And
yeah.
Now that's like earnest money you can get back as long as you don't mess up with your deadlines.
Yes.
But this other money that, you know, you got with, architects and whatnot, how much was that?
It was about 150, 170 grand between attorney fees and architects up to the point that we needed to get to. So I'm like, okay, guys, like we're
good. And that was before you raised any money?
Before I raised any money. So what I did is I sold the 3-unit, to help fund this. So the first unit that I had, and then as I was going down this path, we sold the 4-unit. So I sold the 7 units and I still have the 12 unit today. It's a fantastic property that, my partner and I love there, but, you had to put some money out on the line. And so with that 150 earnest money, we did structure the purchase service or a sale agreement to align with city approvals and meet those. And then we ran into a little deed restriction and stuff like that. And so like the drafts that were going back and forth, talking to lenders, they were like, we can't do this. Like this is too one side. Like we just can't do that. So it was like, not me saying no, it's like my lenders won't even give me the money if the deed restriction is written like this. So, the deal did fall out of contract one night, because I need an extension and I was about, you know, 15 minutes from 150 grand going hard, not knowing if we're going to get this deed restriction and all these other approvals that we needed. So at like 11:50 that night, we sent an email saying this is, because we didn't hear back from the seller. I said, listen,
you didn't want to have your earnest money go hard. So if you miss and for those of you guys that haven't gone this far into a deal, when you have your earnest money, you know, $150,000, like, you know, Cody did, there's a deadline that he has to get a certain amount of due diligence done and it can be done. You can have different due diligence items be due at different dates or whatever, but there was a certain item that he had out there that he hadn't heard back on, didn't have basically the green flag. Mm-hmm. And so he basically had to say, hey, we're not going forward on this, so that he would have the opportunity to get his earnest money back. If that would have gone through and then he wanted to back out after that, and for that reason, for that contingency that was expired, he's not going to necessarily get his earnest money back.
Then I'm 300 grand upside down on that deal. Got nowhere but some nice plans.
So the following day then, you guys worked it out?
The next morning. Yeah. I think he was just out of town. And the seller was fantastic. Yeah. Like he literally...
You always assume the worst though when you're in your end of it.
Oh, I know. I'm just like, oh my gosh. Like, and they're like he couldn't get a hold of his attorney. I'm like, I like you, but I just... there's a lot of money. I can't just take your word for it. Sure. Like there's and I would want him to do the same, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's business, right? It's nothing personal in that aspect.
Yeah.
But the next morning, I think by like 10 o'clock, we had it locked up again, contract, but you gotta always be watching your risk and stuff like that. And I just wasn't willing to put another 150 grand hard at that point.
Sure.
With so much unknown and out of our control. Like we're doing everything we can to get this deed restriction and then the submetering and all that good stuff. So
what was the biggest issue you had? I mean, obviously I heard one of the stories about the drywall or whatever. I don't know if you want to share that one, but like what's, cause I don't even know all the details. I just heard a little like high level, but what's some of the biggest surprises you ran into and how'd you overcome it?
Oh my gosh. All right. I feel like we're kind of like hitting these as we kind of go. So the next, you know, we've got the deed restriction. We got that tackled. We've got the sub meter and I said, just order the meters. They were a year out. That was the biggest thing with the meters. Yeah. It wasn't so much the cost. Yeah. These are 13 months out to get the meters and switchgear.
So the property I was talking about where we have, it was built in the 70s and there's one utility meter, so like we pay it all and then we, you know, bill it back, including the electric. Yep. So electric's even included, but there we needed more electric because we're going through right now. We recapitalized the deal. It's a deal we bought in 2019. We recapped it 7 months ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so now we're going through and we're actually adding, we're improving the property a lot. We're adding washer dryer. Well, it needed a bigger, you know, more electric and more power. So we had to do the same thing. Yep. And it took, I think it took 9 months for the equipment to show up, which is crazy.
That's why I was a little nervous the other week when I found out that we have to replace the switchgear. Wow, because right. luckily that's about, oh, man, we're, that we're at a about killer. A 4 week lead time yeah. on that one. Gears ordered, I think I heard this morning, we're like 3-ish weeks yeah. out on that. So. All
right, so I don't want to cut you off, but. Anyway, yeah, it's the supply chain still messed up.
It is, yeah. Anyways, yeah, we could talk about that for a while, but we're not gonna, because that's boring stuff. So the next challenge, right? Yes. So let's talk about some of these high level challenges. 11 days before closing, the credit union we're working with calls and pulls the deal. After they moved the goalpost a couple times. So it was myself and one other local partner that were going to be on the deal. They do a lot of deals together with this credit union.
I would never be able to do business with them again if I were you.
I pointed people away from them because of this experience. And it's not so much like, if you can't do the deal, just tell it. Like, don't drag us, because I've got capital coming in. I'm raising money. We've got our under... Long story short,
a lot of money hard. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Money hard. I mean, we're 11 days from the closing date.
Right.
You know, investors are transferring their money, and like we're almost like all filled up and ready to go. But anyways, so the point there is we ended up getting the deal done. We got actually better terms from Prevail Bank through the relationship of one of the partners that we have on the team. And I think it delayed closing like 11 days total. So by within 2 weeks.
Pretty fast turnaround for them.
Very fast. Like a lot of people were kind of very interested in this deal. When we were talking to local lenders and stuff like that, and Prevail has been great to work with.
But is that a credit union or are they a bank?
No, they're a bank. They're out of Barrie. I know. I was like,
I haven't heard of them.
Yeah. So they're a little local bank, I think based out of Baraboo. I was just up there yesterday to drop that insurance check off we had to drop off. But I got a compliment too from the lender. He goes, you're going to have to charge a larger developer fee next time with all this work you're doing on this one. I said, hey, I just want us all to win. Yeah, you know, sure. I mean, I've got friends and family in this deal. I've got my own money in the deal. I'm signing a guarantor on the loan. So it's like, we're all going to win together. Sure. And I'm not going down.
For sure. Can you share the drywall one?
Oh, yeah. Without getting, let's.
Because I heard, through a mutual friend that Cody and I had, I heard like a little bit. Josh shared a little bit with me. I'm like, oh, shit, that doesn't sound good.
I think there's a lot of people around town. Madison's a small town, right? I mean, that's why you always do the right thing and treat your partners right.
No, I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus.
I get that. Yeah, yeah. So, but my point is, like, a lot of people know that there's some hiccups on this project, and Cody's getting through them. And we're taking the high road here and doing the right thing throughout. But so basically the challenge here, it's a big project that we're doing, right? Seller gave us full access to the property. I mean, we're out there over about an 8-9 month period as we're going through all this due diligence, having the contractors and subs and everybody come out there. And we do a kind of a all in. I'll use some different terms just to not be very specific on this stuff, but basically a contract that is to capture everything, kind of like an all in cost contract. It will not go over this unless if you make changes. We knew this building was in rough shape. You could see, I mean, I'll post pictures here on the mold that there was. There was holes in the roof.
I saw some of them we were posting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we knew a lot of that drywall had to come out. And we did our proper due diligence, and our partner did not do proper due diligence as it came to find out. And so there's been some back and forth on what the contract calls for. And it's very clear that all of the drywall in this scenario, or all of these items are included in this, when we did not, you know, like the scope of work did not change. Turning 129 apartments out of this building. So we'll be able to talk more about this at a future date in much greater detail.
And if you want us to delete anything out of here too, we can delete stuff out of here too.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, but, I mean, there's really no secret. I mean, I've literally let others read our contract to make sure, because like, I'm new to this, right? Like there's no secret, but like I also have a very strong team behind me. I've got a lot of local connections and you know, guys that have been doing this for a long time, other contractors who deal with these contracts all the time. And we've we've had very competent and smart attorneys who not only helped us with the PSA, but also the contract with the contractor and stuff like that.
Well, so. Not only, I mean, just, you know, it's all of those things too that ultimately are going to end up being more valuable to you in the long run than just this one deal and just this one property.
100%. Right?
Because like that learning curve, the experience, again, like you have a, you know, you if this thing's, when this thing is successful, again, the confidence that gives you the, you know, you have more courage, right? Yep. And again, all the, you know, all these setbacks, all these issues, they're only going to make you stronger. And that's where you learn. And that's where, and this is like, this is the thing too, is like, if you're wanting to do your own thing, go do your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go do it. Make the jump. Because as Cody's kind of shared here, like there's kind of always a way through it. You just got to have the mindset and to never give up, to not give in, to, you know, be solutions, you know, oriented and not, you know, not, you can't be negative. I mean, sometimes we all get negative and sometimes we want to just, you know, throw it in and be done. But like, you know, you can't spend too much time there. You just got to move on and you can't give up.
But and to that point, it really is simple. Just keep moving forward. Yeah. But having the right people around you. I mean, I know I mentioned this earlier, but Emily, I mean, there were some times even when we're under contract and trying to get through the deed and try to get through the waiver and like, are we going to get this deal going? There were a couple of days I thought about giving up.
Yeah.
There were tears. I'm not going to, I mean, I'm a dude. Sure. Yeah, whatever. But like, I didn't know if I was going to make it. Like if this, did I make the right decision? Yeah. And Emily wrote me a note one day, you got this. And I still have it in my bind. Like, so the hard days, literally look at that and I'm like, okay, I got this.
Yeah.
And the shit that we've been through already in this project and other stuff, like I would 100% would not change it.
Yeah.
Would not change it because it has built, the next project's going to be even easier. And now we've got all this knowledge and we can help other people that might be look, actually just yesterday was talking to a group over in Michigan looking to do the same thing. And this, it's the second time I've talked to him to kind of help coach him through this. And okay, here's the next thing. Make sure you check this. So like just being able to help others do the same. I don't need a cut of that deal. I don't need compensation, but like just helping others grow.
Yeah.
It all comes around.
Do you see yourself doing more deals like this or being more, I mean, are you wide open to kind of all types of multifamily? Do you see yourself doing ground up? Do you see yourself doing value add? Do you see yourself doing more conversions? What do you see yourself doing going forward? I mean, obviously you're still very focused on this project with where you're at.
Yeah.
What do you see yourself doing going forward long term?
Yeah. So multifamily specifically, right? I mean, back when I got started, I was like kind of jumping around like, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? Multifamily is what I believe in and what I love. So it's always going to be some multifamily component with it, whether if it's a mixed use or not. But looking at some other conversion opportunities between the Madison area and the Milwaukee area. I haven't broken into the Milwaukee market, but there's some interesting opportunities over there currently evaluating and then working on a couple ground up potential deals here in Madison, you know, kind of that 40 to 80 unit. Mm-hmm. That one's going to be a little bit, or those would be a little bit more of a unique structure. Cause if I'm doing ground up in a great location that these would be, I'm not looking to sell this in 5 years. I want this for 20 plus years. So the partners that I'd be bringing in on that one also share that vision.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, you know, I mean, I'm definitely open to value add as well. Cause that's what I did with, you know, the 19 units. I mean, not at the 129 scale, but the hotel conversion is a very unique thing because it's a development, yet it's a value add. You know, it's kind of all of that.
It's all wrapped in one.
Getting to learn the building code and all the headaches that go along with that, and fire callers and you name it. I mean, I've shared some videos on that stuff, and like I physically have done
the fire caller one.
I physically have done work
you
went through on and
did the fire callers.
I think
you had a video on that.
I was like,
man, he's grinding. I get it. Nose to the grindstone, in the dirt, in the mud.
I understand, like, there's going to be some surprises in this, right? Like, that's what our contingency should be for in that scenario. And so, long story short, this piece, it's like these chases in between the bathrooms. They were never technically up to code, we found out. Well, you don't know that until you start ripping that apart. Yeah, which is understandable. Well, the chain, you know, to do that work, if we went down this one route with our partners on this, it was going to be over $100,000. So by me stepping in, hiring a couple other subs to come in and do it and doing some of the work myself, we did it for less than $20,000.
Yeah.
So those are the types of things where I'm willing to step
whatever
in.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, whatever it takes. And it's worth my investors, like $80,000 to save my investors. And my time, I mean, it literally took a day total, not even a full day for the stuff that I did on that portion.
Yeah.
But I've cut out some floors that were moldy that, well, played games with that and stuff like that. I'm like, I'll just go get it done.
Yeah,
like, I don't like to sit and point fingers. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Solution. But if you're responsible, take responsibility. Have I messed up on things? Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why I've signed some change orders. You know, like there's items in here that we missed or we decided to change. 100% we take that. That's the way that it works. And that's anything in life. Just take ownership.
So as far as like the timeline on this project, are you guys ahead, behind, right on pace? Where are you guys kind of falling there?
So I say we're behind just because I want to get it done faster. But my original underwriting had this coming online in May. So we're on pace.
May of 25.
May of 25. Yep. We have, I would say we're much further ahead than I thought on the potential lease up, right? I mean, we've got over 150 people wanting to move in there, May, June, July timeframe, some furnished, some unfurnished.
So have you guys like ran applications on those people? That
That's the thing. Yeah. So like, I always want to say like, okay, these are not like fully qualified.
Signed up on put their email in or something.
Yep.
Put
so on our we've got our website and then apartments.com too. We went live with a couple months ago just to start, you know, building the lead flow and stuff like that. But, just by looking through the list and, you know, a little bit there, you can tell that a lot of these people are qualified and they're local. Cause I'm like, what is this all spam coming in?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's a local number. And that's a local person that works at this, you know, it's like,
You guys have like a grand opening and then that gives people opportunity to come through and tour that way or just setting individual tours once it's open?
Yeah. So I'm going to be doing a grand opening here. Once we get a little, hopefully in the next month or so, we'll have a date on that. Because the Alder, I get emails from the neighbor too, or neighbors, multiple of them, how excited they are that we're doing this and how much nicer the project looks and how it's already cleaned up the neighborhood and just, it's a great neighborhood. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that I want to get through there and show and then, kind of make a splash grand opening. Because it's a really cool project. You'll have to stop out there and check it out.
No, yeah, for sure. I'd love to, if I'm around for this grand opening, I'd love to swing out, see it and see the work you've done. And because it's, again, I mean, you know, it takes a lot of guts and balls and courage to go out and do this and say, hey, I'm going to go out and turn this. Yeah. And again, like, you know, Greg being super successful real estate investor in Madison passed on the deal, right? And again, a lot of it's because like, you know, the headache and whatnot. Yep. And so it takes like a certain, you know, a certain person to, you know, maybe it needed to be someone that was newer to the game who was really hungry. Cause maybe that's what Greg didn't do. He's like, oh man, I'm just not gonna do this cause I've got enough other things. And through that thing, you know, and it probably took someone like you. Cause there's been projects I bit off where it's like other people passed and I'm like, they've been wildly successful. But I think it just was some almost younger, a little bit naive type energy.
Oh, like I said, if I knew what I knew 2 years ago, would I still do it? Absolutely. Would I do some things differently? Absolutely. But the more I know, the more I'm like, oh man, that's going to be a huge headache.
I know one of the biggest questions I get from people. So I'll ask you, how'd you end up raising money on this deal?
Yeah. Good. So a lot of it actually came through, friends and family and then people I met at the meetup. So prior to doing this raise, I had 6 meetups. And so I started, you know, through that, started building relationships and getting referrals and stuff like that. So I have this email list and people that I'm starting to know that I know that they want to invest in real estate. And I was having investor calls and coffees and stuff like that with people. And then I started kind of teasing it out or like, hey, here's what we're working on. Here's kind of the timeline. And then I had the investor pitch deck and I said, okay, we're going to open this up, took soft commits. And I was talking to somebody yesterday. I think there was $100,000 difference from what we took in soft commits to what actually got committed.
Yeah.
So we only had about $100,000 back out of, it was a $3.1 million raise.
It's really crazy. I get a lot of people that ask, well, how often do people back out? And I said, for us, it's like rarely.
Well,
it's a small portion of people that back out. And I don't know if it's just because the type of people that you deal with when you start to look, okay, at raising a certain amount of funds or with a certain minimum or whatever, but it's rare that we have people back out just like you kind of said.
I'll be honest, Justin, I think it has a lot more to do with your character and your reputation. Because when I was talking to that same group yesterday, this is going to be their first capital raise too for this conversion that they're looking at doing in Michigan. And they're like, hey, we've talked to some other people and they say we should take soft commits of double what we need to raise because they have about half of them fall out. I'm like, that kind of speaks to their character. Like, I feel like, well, the way that I operate is if I'm doing a deal, I fully vetted it. My ass is on the line. Like, I'm all in. I'm putting my own money in and stuff like that. So I think people see that and feel that and know the work that we've already done. And same for you, right? You've got that relationship with your investors and they know, like, and trust you. So, well, yeah, unless if something crazy happens or, you know, sometimes it's timing. Yeah, it's just
for
timing.
Sure,
like,
for sure.
I'm not saying if you put a soft commit down, like, you have to invest. Like, yeah. Most likely they're going to, but you're going to have a couple fallout every now and then, every deal. It's just
that was
timing.
Before I started raising money, too, that was one of the questions I actually asked Grant Cardone. Maybe it was like 2014 or 2015, mm-hmm. whatever. I'm like, you know, how much of this money actually gets raised?
He's yeah.
Like 99.9% of
yeah.
it. Like, you know, it's when people commit, you know, it's there. Yeah. And so, because I always thought that was a bigger thing, too. And that when I was like raising money for my first deal with multiple investors, it was, I don't know, we raised 900 or something like that. I think I put in, so I did 1031. So I put in, of that, I put in about half.
Nice.
But the other 450, like in my mind, I'm like, okay, like, I might have to raise like 600 of self commits, like, because it was 750, because people are going back out. And like, for me, no, that wasn't the case. Yeah. Everyone that, you know, committed came in. And that's kind of how it's always been, whether we've raised, you know, again, that 450, whether it was, you know, or whether it was 12 million on a deal, it's kind of been pretty consistent. So,
yeah, I think like we talked about earlier, like if you're doing the right thing, word spreads, people are going to want to do business and partner with you. It's that simple, you know,
And then did you set up pretty typical? Is there a pref and then, you know, the carry, you have the carried interest and stuff like that?
Yeah, good question. So the way that we did this one was 75% of the deal went to limited partners, 25% for general partners, and then a 7% preferred return. So this one, obviously, with it construction, there's no cash flow for the first couple of years.
The prefs paid out first before the 25%.
Correct. Yep. So we, us general partners, that's what all of the, there's three of us on the general partner team that helped secure the loan was, we don't make any money until our investors get that 7% preferred return, and then it's split out.
So. And then it's just the one waterfall?
So just the one. Yep. Okay. Simple, straightforward on this one. Yep. I'll probably always keep it very simple and straightforward. I years ago, I used to be a financial advisor for about a year. Well, if you can call it that. Yeah. It was more like a college education. I worked at Northwestern Mutual and
spent that too, man.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I spent more time with my buddies at TGI Fridays having afternoon beers.
What that actually taught me, though, was how to get on the phone and just start calling people.
Yep.
Like the network marketing direct sales that I did and that experience with Northwestern Mutual, the best things I ever did because I had to just get out and talk to people and I became numb to hearing no.
Yep.
So then it's like raising money or like asking someone to buy their building. Like no doesn't faze me. You just keep rolling and I look back because of that. Cause I put in effort and I would show up, I'd do my cold calls and the insurance game was tough, you know, being in college and then direct sales right out of the get-go was tough right out of the get-go, but then, you know, it eventually had success.
Yeah. It's just, doing it.
Yeah.
It's like you said earlier, like just do it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's really not rocket science. You know, you kind of mentioned earlier, like all the roadblocks that I hit and stuff like that. It's like, well, I always say I'm a wise man, but I'm too stupid to quit. So
with this conversion, where are you, is this one? And again, I share what you want to share, you know, whatever you don't want to share, just say you don't want to share it. But what's your, is this something you're looking to hold for a longer period of time? Is it a 3-year, 5-year? Are you going to recap your investors and get them out? Are you just going to sell it and be out with your investors? I mean, what's going on with this project long-term?
Yeah. So long-term, it's about a 5-year hold is what we had talked to investors about. Obviously somewhat market dependent as well. I mean, if we can refi and recapture cash and it's, you know, we're getting some midterm rentals and great rents with, I mean, again, the location, the hospital, American Parkway, MATC, everything within 5 minutes of there in a brand new building with pool, fitness center, dog park, dog wash, you know, all these amenities that you're going to be paying, you know, probably 50% more for the same studio at these other places. We'll see. But as of right now, in what was communicated to investors and like on our investor deck when I was talking to them, it's about a 5-year hold is what we're projecting.
Gotcha. So. Okay. What type of loan did you get? Is it a construction loan or are you refinancing once you stabilize is it already kind of fixed?
We've got a fixed. So we've got a 5-year fixed with 24-month IO on this. So
the 24 months started when you started drawing?
Which was 10 months ago, I think was our first 10 or
So you'll get about a full year of operating with interest only. Or, I mean, not while you're stabilized. It'll take you.
Correct.
How long are you guys projecting to be stabilized?
3 years is kind of what we.
Oh, 3 years.
Yeah.
Is, well, just, well, wait. But, so I'm sorry. Oh, from so, when you. Yeah, yeah. Is it from when you can start signing leases in May? How long? When do you think it'll be stable?
24 months. 24 months. Is kind of what we're looking at.
You gave yourself a big window.
We did. I'm very conservative when it comes to my underwriting, especially on a project of this size. I'm like, I don't know what.
Yeah.
I think I was underwriting it anywhere from 8 to 12 units.
24 months from this May?
Yeah.
You giving yourself?
We got a lot of runway.
What's your actual target?
I mean.
What are you committing to yourself?
August, I want to be above 90%.
Love it. Okay. So if you do that, you'll be crushing.
I said I want to break some records on this, guys. So let's go. So we would be 100% signing leases right now if we were more confident in our certificate of occupancy finish date. I'm not going to. Sign 50 leases,
and a bad, it's a mess.
It gets a bad taste, right? Yeah, so we're trying to communicate with the, potential residents there, like, okay, here's kind of the timeline and here's where we're at in the project and stuff like that. And we understand, yes, we've got that lead list or whatever, but not all of those are going to convert, maybe it'd be great if 20% did.
Because after time goes by or people just want to get updates on the project, or maybe they just want to come see it or whatever. Not everyone might be serious about moving.
So, I've got,
well, if you give yourself 24 months from May, 2025, that means May, 2027. So if you actually get, 90% by August of 2025, I think you're sitting in a pretty good spot.
Yeah. I think we'll be in a pretty good spot with this one. And we'll be doing some furnished units as well. We're not going to start off with too many of those because, we don't want to go buy furniture. And then if it doesn't hit the market, probably 10 is what we're looking at getting. And I think that's a good amount to start with. I mean, just kind of looking through the people that have signed up in interest in wanting furnished units and handful of, like I said, travel nurses and stuff
So have you been creative with the marketing and trying to build relationships with the hospital? It's like you're on their preferred housing list or something like that, HR department or whatever?
Yeah, so what was that, a month and a half, within the last 6 weeks or so, we had a kind of a neighborhood meeting with all the developers in the area with the Alder that set that up, and there was a couple reps from the hospital that were there too, and so that's kind of when the conversation started. And then with MATC, we're kind of in between if we're going to do college pads or not. I mean, I feel... I don't know, but apartments.com is kind of the biggest driver on that. Yeah. And then with our visibility too, a lot of those leads just from the sandbergstudios.com on the highway side, and then a couple little signs on the front.
There's a ton of traffic. I drive by there probably once, twice a week, whatever, and I'm just checking out the project.
Yep.
Sweet, dude. Well, this is cool. I'll be excited if I can, hopefully I can make the grand opening. Would love to come through and see it.
Absolutely.
I think it's awesome what you're doing and way to have some courage and go after your goals and dreams. And we'll have to get you on. And there's a handful of people I want to have come on the podcast again, but maybe a year from now, after you guys have, you get to your 90% occupants by August, maybe another fall episode to kind of talk about this a little bit and see what's going on. And
then I'll share all the dirty secrets.
We want the dirty. Secrets.
Yeah, we won't have to talk with a filter on right now.
I do. Joel, I know this. We also do this something new that we're doing at the end of our podcast where the previous guest asks a question to the next guest.
Oh man!
But then the cool thing is you answer that, and then you get to ask next guest a question.
That's really
cool. Without knowing who the guest is.
Right. So. Oh damn! Yeah. All right.
What was the question?
So the previous guest asked if there was someone wanting to do what you are currently doing, what are 2 to 3 pieces of advice that you would tell them to help them be successful?
Oh, absolutely. This is kind of easy, right? I mean, we've talked about it. It was kind of the theme here: take action. And if I'm brand new to this, that action that I would take is getting around people that are doing this and learning from them and reading books and podcasts, like listening to this podcast here, YouTube videos. So just immerse yourself in the knowledge and education in this business, as well as get in the room with other people doing it, whether if it's meetups or the mastermind that Justin hosts. Like, there's a lot of opportunity, but the biggest thing is take action, get yourself in that room, get action, read that book.
And the biggest thing, with the taking action too, because some people are like, well, what's taking action? Mm-hmm. And so it boils down to, what do you want, right? What is your goals? What are you trying to accomplish? What are you committed? What are you going to commit yourself to go out and accomplish? And work backwards. What do you need to do to accomplish that? And what would it look like just before you got there? Okay, well, what does it look like? Just because that's what I did. Like, I knew that there was this place that I wanted to get to and be at. I'm like, okay, well, if I don't know how to actually start down that path now, I just kind of worked backwards from where I wanted to be and just kind of, and again, some of it has to be a little bit of imagination, yep, creative, you know, whatever. You might not be right or whatever, but then ultimately that's going to get you. If you can keep breaking that down and working that backwards, it's going to tell you what the first thing you need to do is.
Absolutely.
And then you just got to go do it. And then I would just say too, you know, adding on, you know, once you start taking action, you know, have as little time as possible pass in between, you know, the decision to do something and doing it, but then also in between each action, like whatever's necessary to do next, start it right at the completion or while you're still completing the first step.
Yep.
Simultaneously, like compress time by doing that. And it's crazy where, you know, again, you just started buying real estate, Cody,
4-ish years ago.
And you built your way up to 19 units. You're 19 units currently? Or you sold off those other buildings.
Sold
so you
seven.
Built up to 19 units, sold seven. You got this hotel conversion going 129 units. Yep. You're 4 years into this game. So like, you look at how much, you know, your finances and your life's changed just in those 4 years. Like, you know, so just push through it. Like, everyone gets started and they're so amped and they think they're going to do all this stuff in like 10 days, which you should. You should go out and do all that stuff in 10 days, but don't discredit what you can accomplish in 2 years or four mm-hmm. years of that consistent effort of taking action. And, you know, and that will compress time and, you know, get you to where you want to be. Your next 5 years can be completely different than your last five if you commit and take action. So that'd be what I would add to that too.
No,
I know it's supposed to be for you to answer, but you know,
that was good.
Work backwards and figure out.
I absolutely agree.
So, that's probably essentially like what you did. You had to figure out, okay, what's the first, like with this project, what's the first thing I got to do? Well, I got to figure out at what price, you know, I can buy this building and how much it's going to kind of cost this, you know, to with some rough numbers.
And if I didn't have a network of people who have done that before me, I could reach out and learn from and say, okay, here's what I'm thinking. Like, am I doing this right? Yeah. Like, what are your thoughts? There's always that balance too. It's like, yeah, you have to do it on your own, but you also have to know when to tag in and ask for some help or have another eye, you know, look at it real quick.
Sure.
I didn't know who to reach out to at the city to see if we could, you know, I didn't know where to start. Yep. So I reached out to Carol Schaefer that I knew, you know, like there, it's all these local contacts that I have that I know, okay, this is my person
whoever
I go to
can
for
get
this.
On the phone, whoever you can get in front of, like whenever I'm calling, like if I get a phone trip, press one. I'm just pressing, like I'm going to press one until I get a hold of somebody. And so you just got to keep pressing one. And that's today's episode. Cody, appreciate you joining us. Hope you guys all enjoyed it. And if you're not already, be sure to like the channel, follow the podcast, and share it with a friend.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cool, man.
Whew, that was good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.